Views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio in the AM. I'm Catherine Chisnell Mitchell, and I'd like to thank my good friend and mentor, C.A. Nuri, for allowing me the space this week to host a panel of guests. I'm so honored to have back in the studio to talk about one of the issues that is most important to our country and dearest to my heart. And happy birthday to me. This is my present to myself to come in the studio with you today. And this is the second part of an interview we did a few months ago. We have in the studio today our domestic violence task force led by our ASP Kendra Wims, who we had in, I think, in January to talk about the new building going up. And she's joined with our gentleman, one of our two gentlemen on the task force, Corporal Terrell Sands, that I met back in the day in Dorian when he was helping out Ranfley with some issues. And also we have a woman police constable, Patrell Hutchinson, joining us today, who's told me not to ask her too many questions, but too bad. ASP Wims has told me that you're going to talk today, you're going to share today, and you're going to lead us. As we know from anyone who listened the last time or have heard her speak in numerous occasions and in numerous forums, ASP Kendra Wims is a leader in our country that has taken on the task of curating the team, a team with skills, experience, courage, and heart to take on the most painful and personal crimes in our homeland and deal with the domestic violence issues on the home front. Now, this was this was a vision of the police commissioner. I think it began back in 2022 when there was an uptick in cases during the pandemic, during the financial crunch and crisis that had happened with post-Dorian and post all of the things happened, you began to see more of a need to deal in a more holistic way the issues that were coming into your doorstep at the domestic violence unit. So a special task force was put together that could meet these needs and had a skilled set of people that when you walked in, you felt that you were met with wisdom, but also with empathy, with a capable, caring set of people that would make this experience something that wasn't just doable, but healing, that would launch you in a place and space that would be better for you. Anyone listening to the airwaves knows today that we can't escape the undercurrent of violent talk, behavior, conduct in all realms of our Bahama life in every month and every day of this year. We have slaughters happening in the street, in the schools, in daylight. We are speaking violently to us in private and from the podiums. And the fact that this is something that has become normalized, that we accept as part of our culture, that is something that doesn't necessarily shock us. We can still stomach our tuna and grits in the morning as we read our headlines and as we listen to the airwaves, is something that this team is taking on and saying, no, we need some training in this. We need some sensitivity. We need to understand that which a toxic home environment in which abuse is prevalent and reoccurring is not normal, that this is not normal. That the things that allow us to accept this, the pressures are numerous. Single parenting, religious, societal, poverty, the fact that people financially can't see a way out and past where they're at, and if they step out of their only investment in life, which is a toxic home environment, they would literally be adrift with nowhere else in the future. And fear for life, fear for future, fear for their children. And these are the things that sort of eliminate our choices. But this very special task force of people are here to provide us with choices. We're going to be touching on a few different things today. I know that ASP Wims will be taking us through the cycle of domestic violence and how it occurs and its generational effects and how we can even identify it. We're going to be talking about the referral pathway that is being implemented to help victims of abuse so we can see a picture of what it looks like that if you're in a situation where you might be motivated to have the courage to take the first step towards something that may free you from that. And we're going to talk about, I don't know if this is the right phrase for it, and you can everyone correct me and ask the questions that I miss out on this subject today. But we're going to be talking about the sensitivity training that is happening throughout the communities and throughout the schools as you partner with the Ministry of Education. And the fact that you're going in places and saying, this is what abuse looks like. This is how we identify it. This is what it even means or sounds like to us. And we're going to be talking about these fine people in the studio today that motivate me to get up and go out and continue my passion projects for the roles they truly play in this bigger picture and the dedication they express, because it's something we need to hear. I think we're all a little bit of depressed, and we all, at times, I guess anyone who has had some power cuts over the last week experiences a different normal than people who have had generators all week. People who have had kids studying in heat and 100-plus degree misery have had a different experience than someone who hasn't said that. And I think last time ASP Wims was on the show, she said, you know, normal is different for everyone, but something that isn't normal is domestic violence within our homes. Again, just to wrap up before I hand over, you know, we're accepting that there's a global climate that we sort of get hardened by the headlines. You see so much of children dying in the fires thousands of miles away, and you're so used to opening the paper on a daily basis, even sometimes receiving a Marco alert on your phone and saying that must be crime-related. There's a helplessness that comes attached to us. I won't say that it's a hard-heartedness, but it's almost an acceptance that this is just how it is. There's not much we can do to change it. There isn't a solution that's reachable for most of us in the general public. So you may feel heartsick, but we carry on again with, I don't know another word besides helpless, a helplessness about this. And this crew is the esteemed, the trained, the capable, the experienced set of people curated to come and say, this is how you help. This is how we help. So welcome today.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much, Catherine. It is our pleasure to be here today.
Not to take away from the seriousness of the discussion, but they definitely got the memo that the camera is on in studio, because everyone is looking so beautiful and shining despite the heavy mantle that you bear in taking care of them, taking care of us at the places that we hurt the most. Can we go around the table and introduce ourselves today and maybe say a little bit about your role in the task force?
I am Assistant Superintendent of Police Kendra Wims. I'm the officer in charge of the Domestic Violence Task Force, and the Commissioner of Police, Mr. Clayton Fernando. I would just like to send out a quick shout out to him, as well as Assistant Commissioner of Police, Mrs. Janet McKenzie, and the Senior Executive Leadership Team of the Royal Bahamas Police Force. And I just want to say thank you to the Commissioner for amalgamating this unit to assist victims of domestic violence holistically and their family. So I'm the officer in charge, as I mentioned, and I supervise this great, great initiative, this great unit.
Go ahead. We're not going to be shy today. Who's up next?
My name is Terrell Sines. I'm a corporal in the domestic violence unit. My role in the unit, well, you know, whenever it comes to domestic violence, persons always ask, well, where are the men? Mm-hmm. Because men, well, it's hard to say, majority of times men are seen as the perpetrators, mm-hmm. but the truth about the matter is that men are victims too. So it provides a level of an extra layer of comfort for men now to come in and make their reports. So based on that, we're now seeing an increase in that area.
Thank you so much for saying that. Whenever I go into doing these shows, I always have those questions come from my friend groups and saying, well, what about the men? And not just as perpetrators, but as you said, as victims, but also as protectors. Because I don't know if anyone's seen the viral man versus bear question that's been out on the internet. I know Aaron's talked about it. But would you rather be in the woods with a man or a bear? And so many men have said, but there's so many good men. There's so many men out there willing to protect and put a hand in front of you, not to block you, but to protect you, to put a hand under you, not to hold you down, but to raise you up. So thank you for being one of those men that are keeping us safe and protecting us, and also acknowledging that men can be the receivers of the abuse also, which is absolutely true. And I think last time on the show, we touched on the face that culturally, it's really hard for a man to step through those doors and say, I'm being beaten. There's a shame factor there. So thank you for playing that important part.
Pleasant. Good day to all. I am Woman Constable Patrell Hutchison, currently attached to the Domestic Violence Unit of the Royal Bahamas Police Force. It is an honor to be here today. My duties at the Domestic Violence Unit is to take instructions, which I do very well. On a daily basis, we have plenty to do, and we go out there looking for those who need help with our arms wide open. And we do a lot at the Domestic Violence Unit, which we will discuss here today. Follow-ups is one of the most important, because once we start with you, we would like to continue and finish the job. And thank you for having me and my colleagues.
I love some of the phrases you used. You said arms wide open, because again, there's a, what if the police force were a body, this section here is the heart. And they are truly, it's hard to feel the warmth when you think about stepping into a police station, but especially with the new building that they're putting together that would have, you know, ability to offer nursing, legal care, rooms for children, even residential facilities. As people come in and they need the support, because they may just be showing up with a prayer and a suitcase, that's really important. But arms wide open is the attitude. It's not, you're not coming in to be put on trial. You're coming in to be embraced. And the follow-up, again, this is not just a one-stop shop. This is just not a one appointment in which we'll have someone act out or arrest someone, but we're going to try to break the cycle of trauma. ASP Wims, you said you were going to touch a little bit on the cycle of domestic abuse. I think that's important to touch on again, even though we've talked about it before, because, you know, just to define what domestic abuse is and the cycle and the generational impact that you talk of.
Domestic violence is very vast. When you look at the term domestic violence, it has many layers. It goes from physical abuse to financial abuse, as well as social abuse. You have emotional, psychological, and you even have spiritual abuse. Mm-hmm. Persons who comes into the unit, we're finding that they only think domestic violence is physical, mm-hmm. but it's more so all of those layers that makes up domestic violence as a whole. And we find that the cycle of abuse, where women in particular return to a relationship where they are being abused for sometime 1 year, 2 years, it could even go up to like 20 years, 20 plus years. And then you find that the victim's mother was in a relationship of an abusive relationship, and the cycle continues. The cycle never stops, because that young lady who's now become a victim in her now generation is now, because it became a norm in the home where she saw her mother being abused. And statistics have shown that when children see this happens in the home, the female child may become a victim and the male child a perpetrator. Unless the male child decide, hey, I don't want to be like my dad. I want to be a good man when I grow up. But statistics never change. It has shown that the male child would more than likely become a perpetrator. So the cycle of abuse is from generation to generational. And a lot of women in particular, and we find in that in the school system when we do our circuits, as well as our circuits in society, that persons are not aware of it. They're not aware that it's a generational curse or it's a cycle that they are going through. And even when women go to the police station and make complaints, and in dealing with their family members, some of their families may say, why don't you leave this man? Why is she staying in the relationship? It's because of the cycle. Because the cycle is so vicious that when a woman is in it, and even a man, because most men don't talk about abuse because of who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't talk about it. So they internalize it. And it becomes a case where even they may even attempt to even commit suicide. So you see domestic violence, and there's a correlation with suicide as well as bullying.
And we've seen the stories of suicide in our headlines, which is, again, the most devastating form of crime, because it speaks to total despair. We're just going to go to the phone lines one moment, please.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. I'm so sorry we lost our caller at that time. Please call us back. We'd love to hear from you. And if anyone else has a question for our unit here today, these are elite people. They're here to help. They're here to advise. They're here to counsel and let you know. If you have any questions about what abuse looks like or if someone you know is seeking the right path forward, please feel free to call us at any time. And our text line is 422-GR96. I know a lot of us have that saved in our phones, 422-4796. Our telephone numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Please give us a call at any time. I'm sorry I should have mentioned those earlier in the show, but I was too excited to jump into the statement. Thank you for refreshing us with that idea, because I think a couple of days ago on Erin had someone on her show with Mr. Nuri, and it was a lady who had experienced rape, and she had spoken about it, and she said the first feeling that she felt was shame, and she felt like it was her fault. And I think a lot of victims of abuse often think, is this even happening? Is this even abuse? When you say it's not just physical, it can be psychological, financial, spiritual. What does that look like? How do we even identify it? And when we look at the women in our lives and the people in our families that we admire and we view as successful and say, all right, so maybe they got hit around, or maybe they had a little bit of this in their family, but they weren't women that were abused women. It's hard for us to identify with that. So I'm guessing that's what your sensitivity training does. Can y'all tell me a little? My mom says don't say y'all. Mm-hmm. Can you please tell me a little bit about this sensitivity training, first starting with how it's conducted within the police force and then spreads towards the wider community? I want to understand what that looks like.
Okay, so What we've been doing, because we always understand it's important to sweep your own doorstep first. So we've heard the narratives about the experiences at police stations. Basically,
it's not like wide open arms, a warm hug.
So we've been told.
Yeah. And
the commissioner, in his wisdom, he looked at all of that, considered all that, and he said that we could do more. We could improve on our services. So with that in mind, we've been going around to every station, every division, creating the awareness on domestic violence, going through the presentations, giving the definitions, and giving the ways, the role that us as officers play in the whole system, in terms of, in a lot of cases, being the first step on a victim's path to recovery and empowerment. And a lot of times, that first step is very important, because with victims, they can leave up to 9 to 10 times before they actually leave. So what if that ninth or tenth time
kills you
is the time that they went mm-hmm. to the station mm-hmm. and yeah. didn't feel, yeah. mind you, yeah. they may have been assisted, but they didn't feel the warmness, the welcome, the empathy, mm-hmm. and they decide, you know what, these people don't care. So with that. That's the reason. That's one of the main reasons for this unit, to establish that safe space, to kind of stand in the gap for the stations and take the time and have the private conversation that most persons want to have, so they can feel safe, secure, and feel like they matter. To be honest.
Yeah. I think the greatest fear for any victim stepping forward, they said, is believability. Like, what does this even sound believable? And again, if I go and if I'm there, then what? Then what happens after I show up at a police station? And again, the new initiative of the building is trying to answer the then what and reduce some of that fear. Because we've been told with the poverty of choice, meaning that, you know, you've said in the past that domestic violence doesn't discriminate. It'll happen behind the gates. It'll happen to political wives, people of standing, people of wealth. But when it happens to you and you have financial restrictions, you lack the choice. You can't go to another house or another, get on a plane. And so, again, providing this choice is part of the service. But the poverty of choice, I think, also comes from a poverty mindset that you don't, again, know if you're allowed to call it abuse, because you've seen it with the women you've loved and probably seen it from the men you love towards those women. It's hard to say that's an abusive situation. How do we get, what is the strategy in having people even identify that they're in that situation within themselves. I know you've gone into the schools. I think you've talked to 10 schools. And you said you've talked to primary school students that are quite young and high school students. What are we telling them as far as these cycles of abuse go so they can identify it if it's happening to them or happening in their homes? What are the words being said?
Okay, so when we go into the schools, before we go actually, I would be responsible for organizing the day and the time. And before then, I would find out necessary information with the guidance counselor. So it isn't, because we want to talk about domestic violence, there's more. We have bullying, conflict resolution, sex. We have a variety of topics.
Trauma indicators, yeah.
Yes, that we would go in and speak with the students about. And, you know, when you're there, it's about, you know, feeling the room to see, you know, exactly what is needed to be talked about. But we domestic violence is our greatest topic, which we do talk about. We just go there just, you know, knowledge is power. And so we just, you know, just reaching out.
So the intent in going is to, what is the intent in going? If you show up in a school, you want to be able to arm the children that if they're suffering from it, if they see it, they have the ability to identify it and get help, or they know what correct behaviors are in themselves. What is the intent in going into the schools? Because these are tough topics.
Yeah, very tough topics.
And I have primary age kids, and I would love them to be aware of this. But again, as you go in, what is the mandate you go in with?
The mandate is spreading awareness, which is the most important, and to go in as much as we can, but being connected with the schools. So not just going to give the information, but to follow up what happens when we do leave. But it's just for knowledge and understanding. Because, you know, the time limit isn't always large, but just knowledge and understanding. So they're aware that this is happening. And like I mentioned, the other topics that they would like us to speak about, just a reminder that this is happening in society, which is important to know.
And I think it's wonderful to have a friendly face of police in the school so early on, so that we know that we're partnering with a community, with the police, that this is not something where we could go ahead and blame the government on everything, but we as a community need to partner with our police to continue to grow our society in a healthy direction. We have a caller. Good morning. You're on the air. Yeah.
Good morning, ma'am, and good morning to your guests.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
How often do they go into the school? That's one. The second one would be when in the school, if they communicate with the teachers or the principal, somebody who would have knowledge of the kids, and if they identify a child or two that has a particular attitude or personality, if they would talk, have a one-on-one with that particular kid or those kids. It's my question. I'll hang up and wait for the answer. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question. We appreciate it. Who would like to handle that one?
Okay, thank you, ma'am, for that question.
Look at you saying you didn't want to talk today. You're doing so well.
Thank you, ma'am. So we go into the schools weekly. Mm-hmm. We would schedule the date and the time. Like I mentioned, we speak with the guidance counselors to arrange the date, the time, and the topic, what is necessary. And the one-on-one with the students is actually happens within the school. We do mention to the teachers and the guidance counselors if it is necessary to go above and beyond. If necessary, they are able to contact us and we can go further depending on the situation. But we make communication with the guidance counselor in reference to the children if necessary. But we go into the schools weekly, like I mentioned before.
If I could just add what Officer Hutchison had also provided, is that when the administration and teachers realize that there is a child in the school that may need assistance in terms of if something is going on in their homes. So what we do, that child is referred to us as well for intervention, and this is where we get social services involved as well, child protection. So it's a partnership approach, whereas the child as well as the home is looked at to see what is exactly going on in the home. We've seen cases in the past where we've done circuits in the school system where a child had just stopped talking, literally stopped speaking. And it became aware to our teacher because that child was an extrovert, and all of a sudden she just became an introvert. She just literally stopped talking. And because the teacher was so aware of the child, she actually reached out to the police. We went into the school. We did a circuit. We did a program as it relates to bullying and self-esteem and peer pressure in the school system, and that child was identified. Social services also is attached to that particular school as well, and we got the guidance counselor involved, and that child received the help that they need. Now, some cases will come out of the school system, the administrators, as well as the teachers, will make us aware that, hey, we have some children in the school that they are displaying some behavioral challenges. And as a result of that, once Officer Hutchison does her, once she looks into the school and say, okay, when we prepare a calendar of event for these schools, we know what to address. Because the teachers as well as the administration already allow us to say, hey, let us know that these are the challenges that needs to be addressed. These are the specific topics. And there is a group of children in the school that is displaying behavioral problems. So that's how we go about challenging assistant victims as well.
And I think that's so important and wonderful now that, because it's my birthday week, it's been 21 years that I've been working with the children's homes in the Bahamas, and we inherit a lot of the children from these cases. But I think what we know that there's so many missed cases. There's so many children that remain within these systems that we never get them, and then often, as you say, the generational cycle will continue after they become adults in their own environments. Mm-hmm. But also what's wonderful about the new initiative of the building that is being put in place is that when possible, when there's a parent that could cope with support, you do try to keep families together. And I know that your social service background really helps with the sensitivity in these mm-hmm. subjects. I think one of the things that Officer Hutchison said is that you read the room. And I think that is a skill set that is so missing in so many areas, that you have the ability to go in, to sense something, to see what's appropriate, to see what's needed, to listen to a teacher and even note the silence of one child, and that's heard like the one lost sheep, that even that one silenced child is worth you going into school and implementing a program is something that is rare and beautiful in any industry, but I imagine especially, and this is a prejudice within the police force, you know, like I was like the police brute force survival, you poor police, y'all go through it. And I have one good brother who's a police officer. Hi, Danny Ramming. I know that you go through it, but the fact that this, again, there's a sensitivity there, that there's a finger on the pulse of what's happening, because domestic violence isn't new. This didn't right. just start happening. This has not just appeared on our cultural forefront. It's just, it is now being heard of. It's now being normalized in a good way, okay to talk about. We now have awareness within our schools going forth. I know that you have in place, and this is one of the things we're noted to talk about today, is a referral program about what happens to your victims. Like, say, okay, I'm here, I'm in the situation. Because I appreciate the art of war in which this whole unit conducts itself. You're saying, this is not new. We have our banners up. It's great to have marches. It's great to have posters and groups saying, stop domestic violence. We know that. But how are we going to get the people that are being hurt into our wide open arms, as you said, and assisting them in a way that is actually healing, actually gives them hope, and actually breaks generational trauma and offers enough hope that they will leave the only safety net they know, which is their home, even if it's toxic, their only investment they have, which is their home, even if it's painful, and come to us so we can assist them. Tell us about the referral program that's in place. You got to talk right into your mic with a nice low radio voice.
So the entire approach, as Mike obviously mentioned, it has to be holistic from the ground up. There has to be a continuity and consistency across not just the police force but different organizations as well. So it's set up in a way that no matter what a victim reports or where they report it, there's a referral pathway between the different agencies. So a lot of times we have persons who they would report physical abuse. However, they don't wish to have any police action, meaning that they don't want the person arrested. And additionally, they may say that, well, he's been psychologically abusive, mentally abusive, verbally abusive for this amount of years. So what we can then do now is we can refer them for counseling. We can recommend counseling that comes through the crisis center, mm-hmm. who's also a partner. We also have a very close relationship with the court system, so that even persons who may not want those persons arrested, there's an option where they can still get a degree of protection and safety through a court order. So, and then there's of course social services,
yeah.
who deals with housing,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes in the interim you have certain NGOs who also step up to sometimes give us that extra, yeah. 12 hours that we need to
medically, get the whole system. Legally, physically, yes. financially, yes. spiritually. I know you yes. partner with a lot of the faith-based organizations. So all of the areas in which abuse happens in the home, as you've defined, because yeah. you talk about it as an umbrella in some of your talks, and you say it's insidious. There's so many ways it gets to you, and those are all of the ways you're looking at to treat. You're yes. not just saying, yes. we're going to deal with this one punch yes. that hit you that one time. We're going to say, we're going to deal with this hurt, that we can support you through all of this. Because I think, I mean, the terror that it must take to say you might be letting go of an entire life to leave something that could kill you is traumatic in itself. So thank you again. I said this last time this group was on here, and I just would like to reiterate that if you were going to step through the doors into a unit to find assistance, these are the faces and these are the people you'd want to meet. The level of heart, of dedication, of sacrifice, of insomnia, of personal suffering this crew goes through in order to make sure that the help is received and met, the true personal investment they make in each and every person that they treat is real. And it's sincere. And I've heard some of the stories, especially from ASP Wims in her talks. And there's a guttural response to this that is beyond their job descriptions. And I'm saying that because I think that it's important that we know, if you choose as an organization to partner with them, or if you have anyone that can come ahead and support them, that it will be well met, that this is a worthy give. I'm begging on their behalf. And by the way, Sister is still in the parking lot. I have had my family touched by breast cancer. I have lost a dear cousin at 31 years of age. She was a police chief in Buckingham, England. She lost she died to breast cancer. But Sister is in the parking lot, and they have said, please come on by with your dollar or your 25 cents. It's only a dollar. They are so lively. They're so energetic in 3,000-degree heat. Please come on by and just support them and, you know, tell them thank you for helping to partner with another painful thing going on in our country. So go say hi to the pretty ladies in pink while you're there. But yes, just to go back to veto away from that, I just got the message saying, don't forget Sister. And this crew, again, doesn't forget anyone. There's no man left behind. It really is sort of that sort of an approach. Where does that come from? I was told I need to ask you about your passion and dedication, but it's hard to ask because it shines from you. Where does that motivation come from? Is that just God instilled? I mean, at what point did you say, this is the direction I want to go in as a police officer?
So the passion and dedication for myself, I would say always being available to help. I've always been a helpful person mm-hmm. in any regard. I can remember from I was in kindergarten.
I could see that about you.
I could see you
being the teacher that takes the instructions as well. Yes.
Definitely. I always enjoy helping. And my great OC, ASP Wims, it's like in the back of my head, going above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
This is very important for the unit. It's something that I keep in mind at all times. These persons that come to us, some of them didn't ask for this to happen to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens, and so they're reaching out for help. And so we're here to assist them to our greatest abilities. And so I think another thing I would like to add is the importance of listening. You know, they come in. You listen and you gather everything, mm-hmm. everything. And so I would say my passion comes from being helpful.
It's comforting to hear. As I envision you in that role, I'm comforted to know that need is being met in this area. And so where does the passion come from to see the race to the end? That's my Chariots of Fire quote for the day.
Well, for me, it comes from a more personal place. Mm-hmm.
Your dad.
Growing up in a certain environment for a certain amount of time. I don't want to go too deep because I need a book, a scroll to list it all, but definitely struggles of a similar nature. Not just in house, but the surrounding neighborhood, and you see it happening, and sometimes you wonder if you're the only one that sees it, because it seems so normal, you know. So knowing that something is wrong and not being able to do anything about it as a child, so that's been in the back of my mind since childhood. But I'm no longer a child, and I'm now in a position where I can actually do something about it. So that's what I intend to do.
Thank you. Last time you were on the show, I don't know, that touched me, because you said as a child you knew something was wrong, that there was an understanding that this wasn't right, that something could be corrected, and that's something that carried you through to adulthood. I think our children can see. I think sometimes we as adults are so grounded in wrong thinking that we, again, normalize a poverty of conduct, of thought, of talk. Again, we don't have to go into specifics, but it's even as of yesterday, we could see leaders in our country behaving with poverty of conduct that we would not want to see within our children. And so I appreciate you stepping up and taking the leadership in that role, especially as a man, because it is a tough thing to counsel to correct. Thank you. Last time you were on the show, somebody called in and you got licked right off, but not really. He called you naive. He's like, you got to be naive. And we were talking about single mothers. And the intent, you know, the response was, you know, there are some wonderful single mothers that work hard, keep the world going round, take care of their children. And he said, I think that this is coming from a place of a lot of naivety, the children running all over the street. And he said, his quote was, it needs to be juxtaposed. The abuse has to be juxtaposed with poverty, because the people that are unable to control their children and their households simply don't have the money to make those choices. What do you think? There's truth in that? Do you think that with all the financial stress we have going on in the country, the fact that people home without lights, without water, without choices, without money to pay bills, is that contributing to the suicide reporting we're hearing, to the upkick in abuse? Is that contributing at all?
I think when you look at that, it stems from so many different angles, not just the temperature or the weather. It stems from the cycle of abuse, where it has been in the home for such a long time. And because of that, you find that because abuse became so normalized, especially in the Bahamas, that persons just don't know they are being abused. But one great thing is, in terms of the reporting, off abuse, it has been great, because we're seeing victims coming through the doors reporting matters of domestic violence, which is a great thing. And I think more so because they're becoming more educated of what the abuse is and what to look out for, what the red flags are. Because before, women would say, if a man don't beat me, he doesn't love me. So now that stigma of that is now being dwindled away. Now they're being more educated, more informed of what abuse is, what is right, what is self-love, how to empower myself, not being more dependent on the perpetrator or a man. So that's one of the main factors I see in terms of the rise in persons wanting to come forward now and reporting matters of domestic violence.
You sound tired. You sound tired, you sound sad, but I don't mean that that's not as a criticism. I mean, I think that as you speak, I feel the weight of what you carry. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate, again, the fact that you can continue to endure through what you do on behalf of us all. So mm-hmm. I just want to take a moment and thank you for that. I feel your heart in your work, and I know how much you've done to continue to carry on. We're going to go to a break right now, but when we come back, please, if you have any questions, call in. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have your questions, but to a break.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
FNM's Bahamians. The Free National Movement will hold its 2024 convention Saturday, June 1st, under the theme Forward Stronger at the Bahamar Resort. Beginning at 8 p.m., an informative and inspirational evening session will be held, where party leadership and other dynamic speakers will address the Bahamian people on the FNM platform and matters of national importance. Free National Movement 2024 convention, Saturday, June 1st. You don't want to miss it.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM. Our telephone lines, if you'd like to call in and talk to this team, is 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And our text line, if you don't have it already saved in your WhatsApp, is 422-GR96. Please call us. We'd love to hear from you today as we sit here with the wonderful team from the Domestic Violence Task Force. Again, we acknowledge the hurt in our country without ever wanting to leave it. Everyone in this studio is born here and gedead here. We're investing in our country because we believe in its beauty and its promise. But we also know that there's hurt here. There's an insidiousness also here that needs to be rooted out. So these are our brave warriors that we can't pay enough to do their jobs that are taking this seriously into the past. But we have Aaron who's coming, so we'd like to have Aaron say something to us one moment.
I've been sent in with a quick reminder for the listening audience. Today, Sister Breast Cancer Society and the Guardian family of companies are partnering for a dollar drive. If you get yourself to the Guardian right now for the donation of $1, you can get a breakfast sandwich and maybe even a cup of coffee to go with it. But more than that, you get an opportunity to participate in a wonderful fundraising initiative by supporting survivors of breast cancer and people who are predisposed to breast cancer with preventative tools and tips and community. Please come out today. I think they're going to be here just after 12, maybe all the way to 1 o'clock. They are eager to see you drive up. Sister Breast Cancer Society and Guardian Radio, Dollar Day Drive. Have a great day, Bahamas.
I got my Tervis. I love it. They have bags for sale. They have T-shirts for sale. And this is one of those organizations that looks at the whole patient and tries to answer the moral, the emotional support they need, as well as just the medical support and encouragement they need. And talking about holistic treatment, I just want to touch back on the, you know, I think we're all get that this is a Herculean task, that it's almost insurmountable when you think about how you can step into people's private spaces to figure out what's happening, heal it, root it out, take to task who needs to be legally reprimanded, and also worry about the heart of the home so that it doesn't step out onto the streets and add to the slaughter that we see ongoing, that the gunning down of our young people and to the, again, the ongoing violence that we see on the rise and unsurprising in our headlines. So what's the good part of it? The good part of it is that, again, our police commissioner had seen to this in 2 years ago, 3 years ago, what year am I? 2 years ago to commission this task force and say, we understand there's a need here and we'd like to meet this with a plan. And the plan is to put together this domestic violence unit together with a building that could holistically meet the needs. We do have a call that we're going to ask, go to quickly before we continue with the ask. Good morning. It's Guardian Radio AM. Good morning. I'm so sorry.
Hi, good day. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. So I've been listening for the last 10 minutes, and I'm hats off to the person who's been suited today for having the conversation. I'm wondering if I may have missed it, and if I did not, I'd like to ask if the protection orders could be explained to the public so that persons know what they can get a protection order for, the process, and specifically how it relates to when someone's removed from the home them still having to take care of their responsibilities. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. We heard that, officers. Okay, mm-hmm. Just one more. I want to grab our other caller. Don't forget that question before we lose him. Good morning. It's Guardian Radio. Good morning. You're on the air. Okay, so does anyone want to touch on that as quickly? That's an important question. That's a big question. Does anyone want to quickly review that for us?
So I mentioned earlier that the protection order, it's an order from a court. Now, that could be, depending on the situation, it could be from the magistrate court, or if it, in terms of persons who may be going through divorce, it could actually come from the Supreme Court. So what it is, depending on what a person reports, let's say it's a situation where there's the person has been physically assaulted. What we do is we allow them to fill out we assist them in filling out the application, whereas we list the history of the entire relationship. We're documenting basically every instance of abuse that has occurred, and in the nature whether it was something serious, something slight, or something that was life threatening. So based on this, now the person now goes to court. And like I said, we have a good relationship with the magistrate court system. So they now have to go to court and present this to the magistrate. Now, based on that, the magistrate can issue an interim order, which can last up to about a 2-week period. Now, in this order, it's gonna list every infraction that the person is not allowed to make against the complainant. So if this person, let's say this person, it's a physical assault, you're not allowed to do that. It states those in black and white. This person comes around the house, engaging in harassment. They're not allowed to come in the house, around the house, around the property. They're not allowed to come around. Where persons were going on people's jobs, causing them to be fired and stuff like that. So it would actually state not allowed to go around this person's place of employment. So it's and. Once the 2-week period has passed, well, during that period, there's a summons to be sent out, and both parties will have to appear before a magistrate to give their side of the story. And based on that, the order can be extended for up to a year and a half. Now, I mentioned earlier that even if persons do not want to make a police complaint, this offers protection, because if a person were to breach this order, they can be fined up to $5,000 or served up to a year in prison. Or in severe cases, it could be even more, depending on the magistrate's discretion.
I would like to say that at this time, the domestic violence unit is still stationed at the East Street headquarters. Its mm-hmm. number is 302-8387, 302-8387. If you have any further questions, if you're in a situation and you don't even know if you're being abused or if you're unsure, if you just need to, with complete confidentiality, have a question, you can walk through those doors or you can call this number and you will be assisted. As my friend told me last time we conducted the show, and she'd been a victim of much abuse in her life, she said, you can choose how your story ends. You can choose how your story changes. These are the change makers in studio today. In our last few minutes, I do want us to touch base on, again, the building that we're doing, one of the solutions that is happening in the country, because we love talking about the problems, but this is, a building is being put in place. I think it's right, I don't know the name of the street, behind the Marina W. Alcott building. Anyway, you know the Infant View Drive. If you drive back there, it's a beautiful building, but it's being put in place. And when you step through the doors, there is nursing care, there's a reception area, there's a children's care area, there's a place you'll receive legal aid, there's rooms for interviews, for counseling, for residential care. However, we need community partnership to make this building come into life. We need our volunteer clubs. We need our service clubs that are interested. Any faith-based ministries. I think you addressed Bahama Harvest Yes. Ministries last week. Mm-hmm. Anyone who wants to invite this task force to address your congregation, your school, please reach out to mm-hmm. them and have them come and talk. But consider sponsoring a room. My church is working on a room right now that's going to be the children's holding room. So it's bright and fun, and it's going to have lots of books and bean bags and rugs. You know, this is a place to for a warm, the wide open arms, as we had the phrase said earlier in the show, to embrace you, to there can be hope, there can be healing, there can be something beyond despair. Anyone who saw the case of, you know, the suicides that have happened or the attempted suicides in the last few weeks knows that we have despair within our country. But let this be a reminder that we have warriors for hope, that there are ways out of these situations, that there are steps forward. Would anyone like to say what the next step would be for your team right now? What's your next thing you're hoping to accomplish as we wrap up today?
The next thing I'm hoping to accomplish within the unit is that for partners and persons in the community to come forward and assist us in terms of making this building a...
We need help.
Fun space.
We need...
Yes.
She said fun, but she means funds. Buns. They need funds.
Even if you can adopt a room. We have five rooms in the housing, in our housing section. And
they're little. It's doable.
Yes.
I'll stop interrupting.
No, that's fine. Even if an organization can't even adopt one room, at least one room, just like what your church has done, and the commissioner is truly appreciative of it, but even if any organization could just reach out and adopt a room, even if we have a play space outside, a little garden area for victims, so when they need to refresh or they need just to get outside and just know what it is, what a family structure looks like, they can even adopt that area as well. So there's so much things that they can do, or persons in the community could just come forward and reach out to the Commissioner of Police, or reach out to me, or reach out to Assistant Commissioner of Police, Janet McKenzie, so that we can make this unit a place where families can feel safe. Please do not suffer in silence. We are here. We are here holistically.
And so, this is a great opportunity to engage in social change in a real effective way, with a team you can trust, that you know that your efforts and funds are going to be well used and will be part of the answer to the helplessness we feel when we read our headlines. If you want to see what could actually help our country, it is breaking the generational cycles and moving forward with hope. And with this team, I have hope today. Thank you so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.